नमस्ते। स्टेप्स ऑफ द सोल, दिस इज अ सब्जेक्ट विच इज इन अ वे बेस्ड ऑन वन ऑफ द मदर्स कन्वर्सेशंस ऑफ नवंबर 1952, एंड इट्स अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग कन्वर्सेशन विच गिव्स अस ए पर्सपेक्टिव अबाउट द योगा विच ऑर्डिनरली वी डोंट हैव, बिकॉज पीपल ऑफ एन आस्क tell us the steps of the yoga, the stages of the yoga, expecting that yoga, like our ordinary physical journey, is a linear process. By linear, I mean that you start from here, you have to go there, and you are moving from this station to that station and you reach there. But even ordinary journey, even in real time, is not a linear process. If you see even going from one place to another, 10 minutes walk, you may encounter unexpected things. Isn't it? So now when it comes to this yoga, which enters into the entire territory of nature, this idea that, you know, you go step one, step two, step three, doesn't apply. Step one, okay, aspiration is important. But even before that, there is a long journey through which the soul has moved. The whole purpose of soul coming into ignorance is that it has to manifest some aspect or the other of the divine. That's why it has come into it. So how does ignorance help? Ignorance helps it to gather the elements and the experience through which it must grow. There is a line in Savitri, it drinks experience like a strengthening wine. So the mind says good, bad, right, wrong, pleasant, painful. This is the mind's evaluation of things. But for the soul, all experiences, what the mind calls as good, what the mind calls as bad, what the vital calls as pleasant, what the vital calls as painful, are all taken in for its growth. That's how the soul grows. Now here comes a very interesting story that, or rather twist in the story, that ordinarily we presume that everybody has plunged at the same time and now they are progressing. But it's not true. There are souls which have gone through many lives of evolution. There are others which are new souls. And there is a world of difference between the two. So ordinarily the souls that have gone through many, many lives of evolution have a very developed psychic entity, because they have gone through a lot more experience. On the other hand, souls which are like new entrants into creation have a certain kind of simplicity. They are just emerging out of the animal state. So they don't have that kind of complexity. And they don't have that degree of psychic development. So you see, it's a paradox. Now what happens with the psychic development? There is a obvious seeking for something, something like a purpose of life. There is even a cry for something, a call for the yoga. All this comes with the developed psychic entity. But precisely because it has gone through many, many lives, nature also becomes very complex. And the mother describes it can become so complex that it's not one. There are many parts of nature, even they become independent personalities. The mother speaks of it in her context of her own yoga, that all the past personalities came to her and she had to integrate them. And it went on, right? In the 60s, she speaks about it, that all of them she had kept in abeyance. They started coming from nowhere. So there are many personalities, not just one personalities, but many personalities, and each of them is almost independent. And to bring them all together is not an easy task. So the more evolved you are, the more complex you are, and the more difficult and challenging the yoga becomes. Though the need for yoga and the call for yoga is also so much more prominent. So this is the first paradox. Second is, she says very interestingly, that whatever we are meant to realize, people often ask what work I should do, what work I should do. It doesn't work like that, that I like this work, I don't like this work. From the divine point of view, there is something we are, each of us is born to manifest. Not born in one life to manifest, but over a long journey. And the way the journey takes place is very interesting. We are given opposition to that main impulse within us. And then she says that, you know, each of us carries within us a contradiction. The very opposite of the thing that is developed in one part of nature, we'll carry the opposite. And she gives three examples. So one example is of a man who is very intelligent but may act in certain conditions in such a stupid and foolish way that nobody else would do that. And people will wonder what has happened. But this is one contradiction she gives. Second, she gives somebody who is very courageous in all parts of nature is an extreme coward in one part of nature. Now when she's talking of courage and cowardice, it's not just about physical courage. It can be a moral courage. It may be courage which, you know, wants you to speak the truth. It can be a vital courage. It can be a physical courage of fear. So all these aspects, so there will be one part which will completely contradict it. Then she gives a third example. Somebody who is extremely generous in one part of nature is ready to give anything and everything, will be a miser in some little part of one's own nature. And this is so arranged, and the word used for this is shadow. Jung calls it the evil persona, and there is a very interesting correspondence of the mother when she is in Japan and then she writes to Sri Aurobindo. And she speaks about this evil persona which haunts like a shadow. Much later the mother says that they were like censored. They are adverse forces and they are actually instruments of sincerity. But she says actually you can see them sitting on your shoulders. And she says since childhood she was haunted by these beings. And this shadow will chase us as if it is trying to prevent us from advancing, making our advance slow or broken. And yet they are needed because in the divine dispensation of things, instead of fighting all the battles all the time, we are given a particular front on which we have to fight. Somebody is, let us say, very calm, peaceful, will have in one part of nature a little impatient aspect which will be making prone to anger. Somebody who is otherwise very generous in, you know, people's tolerant about people may have a very critical part which will be very intolerant and will come up time to time. And you have to face it and overcome it through a long process of the journey. So what happens in yoga, and that's why it's so difficult when people write like this, you know, they begin, they proceed. It's not as simple. Yoga is in real time. It's not like a traditional yoga where we are taught a method and every day at a fixed time you sit, practice and you have experiences. You will first see light, then you will hear sound and so on and so forth. It's not like that, because this yoga enters into the field of nature. Whatever we have gained, we have to bring it back to the field. So what happens in this back and forth? Supposing one has experienced the massive descent of peace, like, you know, we were talking yesterday. So this is wonderful. Peace is the first thing that yogins wanted. And in traditional yoga, you will use that peace and go more and more into it. Try more and more to find moments when you can enter into that peace. Eventually that peace will completely liberate us. But here, once you had that peace, you will again enter into the field of nature. You will see in the mind challenges, restlessness, and peace will bring their quietude. Then it will enter the heart, turbulences of the heart. You will see that little bit it's becoming quiet, but not fully so. Then it will enter the vital, where the peace will say not yet. And the physical, which will not respond to it, or vice versa. This is just one combination I'm saying. Then after some time, when the peace is worked on all these layers, again you will enter into and have another experience. It's a rough way of saying you'll experience bhakti, love. So the heart suddenly opens. Then as it touches the mind may throw up doubts. The vital may throw up passions, which are just the contradiction. The physical body may not be able to contain that immensity of love, intensity of love. And so on and so forth. So slowly with all these aspects of the divine, there is a working that goes on. But one thing will chase us like a shadow. While other things you will see that you are able to conquer a master. But this particular thing will go on and on and on. It will go on till the very last moments of life. Why this is so? Because each time when we win that victory over this particular element, we are actually doing the yoga for everybody else. It facilitates the victory in others. That's how the yoga is arranged. So that means, how do we really proceed on this yoga? That part is the simpler part. The way of yoga is extremely simple. The goal is very difficult. It starts with aspiration. Without aspiration, there is no beginning of yoga. One may live in the ashram for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, doesn't matter. One may do all the right things with tick box. But without aspiration, there is no beginning of yoga. So what about those who may live for years without aspiration? It's a preparation. Many ways the preparation goes on. As we said, that soul in its initial part of the journey may be just gathering some experiences. It is gathering some experiences and, you know, growing. Someone asked the mother that those of us who have stayed in the ashram, is it certain that we'll come back to the ashram? She said, no. There's no such guarantee like that. In different lives, you need different kinds of experiences for growth, and accordingly, they will come. We had the classic example of the boy who wanted to marry an American girl. And when he wrote to the mother, mother said, not in this life. After 2 years, he died. And it is said that he was horse of Rani Lakshmibai. So by some, obviously very simple person who was not developed, he had to go through many experiences of life, so one can understand why he wanted to marry an American wife, lady. But in this life he had come. Probably, you know, Rani Lakshmibai being a vibhuti of the mother, the horse got a chance. But eventually he has to go through that curve. Everybody has to go through this process. Not like, so in one lifetime when we see a whole section of humanity, it may appear, oh, that person is so simple, so nice. It is not as simple as that. All our human judgments don't carry much meaning. And Shobindu, that's why you'll see Dilip Kumar Roy with so many issues. Still, the way Shobindu treated him was very different from the way he treated someone else. So the beginning of yoga is with aspiration. Aspiration is not something we can put into somebody's heart by force. You can't tell a person, okay, you start aspiring from today. Probably he will pray, but aspiration has to come from inside. It is not something which can be artificially produced. And this aspiration, to be true, should not be tainted with ambitions. I want to be a great yogi. Everybody, if I do integral yoga, integral yogi. Even great, huh? Shobindu's disciples, so I am the greatest of all, elitist. It doesn't work like that. And this aspiration is actually a pointer to what we are meant to be. If there is an aspiration, it is a sign that at some level it has been granted. And if there is no aspiration, then we are preparing for it. It's not like anybody is left out. I often give this example before I had become an ashram inmate. So 4 years down the line and somebody told me, Hari, they didn't make you an ashramite this year also. People had become, I said, no problem. I'm waiting at the doorsteps of the Lord. One day he will open the door and say, come in. It's okay. I'm not saying that entering the ashram is equivalent to yoga. But I'm just saying it's okay. So there is a period of preparation in which we read, we try some practice, meditate upon. There were people who came to Shobindu and said, give me something about this yoga. Shobindu said, I cannot give the yoga to you, but I can give you something else. Every day, half an hour, you sit and meditate upon Gayatri Mantra. And then he would say, do you know the meaning of it? So this was a practice he gave, but he said, I cannot give this yoga to you. Just imagine. You can do a practice regularly and yet not be doing the yoga. Yoga begins with conscious aspiration. And most importantly, this aspiration, when is the yoga confirmed that yes, now it's like it has started, but it must be confirmed. Confirmed is when you know that she is the Divine Mother and very spontaneously you open to her or give yourself to her. Now that overrides everything else. So Shobindu says, all who are turned to the Mother are doing my yoga. If one is open to the Mother, then this, all this, because then she takes care. Birth of aspiration, everything else will, because she is the Divine Mother, she takes charge. But she will take you through that process of preparation and all. It's like, you know, previously there used to be, before medical selection, some people may know, there used to be two kinds of medical course. One was where you enter into MBBS and complete the 4.5 years after competition. So I had gone through. The other was where you have something like, you enter into pre-medical, after 2 years, then you are taken into that MBBS. So the exam is here. So the process will be the same. But she has taken charge, so a time will come when she knows that you are ready and the aspiration will come. So all these ways the aspiration can come. This aspiration is what is called as call for the yoga. When the call comes, the sign is then there is no more wavering. Call is not like that, ki, okay, I have a call for the yoga and this place looks nice. This is very good. Let me try out. I tried Vipassana. I tried Art of Living. Ye bhi try kar lete. Then after some time, you suddenly get a feeling. But I believe those guys are giving a much quick results. So one tries and strays. That is not how call operates. Call is like falling in love. You are or you are not. So when you have the call, you enter and then you go through. So there are some elements which are required for the yoga, which we have to develop through all the outer experiences of life. For instance, one of the things which is very important for yoga is patience and perseverance. Endurance. One cannot take the journey of the yoga till the end if there is no endurance, patience, perseverance. Faith. Because it will be challenged. One may think that 20 years, 25 years I have done wonderful yoga. Suddenly I have seen people who have been 50 years. And then suddenly something happened in life. That to go through such great inner difficulty. So I remember one of them, I won't take the name, very dear person. So while he was nearing departure, and 2 more days, but there was a lot of pain in the heart because of something had happened. So I asked him that, what do you want? Can I get you something? Because he's in nursing home and at night. He just looks at me and says, I just want grace. I knew what it meant. That grace was not like just grace the way we ask. There was a tremendous challenge going on. So only somebody who is very persevering, who can endure, who even in the last moments when you are besieged with everything says, I want grace and has complete faith in the grace. So this yoga is like that. Change of nature is... There is a difference between conversion and transformation. The mother repeatedly says, what is conversion? Conversion is the first step. Conversion is where nature is agreeing. Okay, I am ready for change. But transformation is the actual change. Conversion is important. There are signs of conversion. When the mind says, okay, whatever Mother and Shubindu says, it is ultimate for me. So that is conversion. When it says, I have no fundamental doubts, it is conversion. But the mind transformed means it is a luminous vessel and vehicle of light. It becomes a mind of light. That is transformation. The heart, when it says that I belong to the divine and I love only the divine, it is conversion. It will lead to transformation. But that converted heart need not give itself completely in one go. It may still be tied with the strings of the heart to this relation, that relation, parent, child, 100 things, because conversion and transformation takes time. Same with the vital. It agrees, my life is meant only to serve the divine. And then some self-interest comes here and there and one carries it all. So there is a conversion where we have fundamentally accepted that yes, this is my life, and one aspires in each of these members, including the body, for the divine, physical body to become a vehicle of the divine. Conversion. Body aspires, I want to be an instrument of the divine. Body, not just the heart or mind. But the body is also becoming instrument of the vital. Transformation means the body automatically is able to reject all these things. Because now it is completely aligned and tuned to the divine influx. It doesn't accept anything else. So this is the process. So it's again, the yoga works in all the parts of our being. For instance, when we hear about aspiration, rejection, surrender, each part has to aspire. Each part has to reject its own difficulties. Each part has to surrender. If the mind aspires for light, mind has to also make, enter into rejection. What does it has to reject? Doubts, obscurities, all kinds of influences, all kinds of, stuck in the mud kind of, different systems of yoga, with which it's constantly comparing, belief systems in which it is caught up, all that the mind has to reject, one-sided opinions or opinions. Opinions are all one-sided, and believe that this is true. So mind has to reject all that. And then the mind has to surrender that you illumine my mind. I cannot by my own efforts. Then again with the heart, same process. Aspiration, rejection, surrender. With the vital, aspiration, rejection, surrender. With the physical, aspiration, rejection, surrender. But the thing is, it doesn't work like this. Okay, now for 5 years I will focus on the mind. Some people try to do that. Or 2 years. Then 2 years I'll work on the heart. No, because there is an interconnectedness of nature. So what happens is, the moment we open to the mother, the divine Shakti starts touching us all over. So what happens when she touches? One part opens and blossoms like this and becomes a wonderful vehicle and instrument and receptacle. Another part opens hesitatingly, but opens. Third part suddenly resists tremendously, precisely because there is light in the same human being. And the fourth part hides inside the subconscious dusk. You know that when the soul comes out in Savitri, that description, what does Shivendra write? That all moods, unholy, ugly, untrue, hid their shame in the subconscious dusk. They run away. They say, okay, they'll come out. Even after the psychic realization. So some part will hide, some part will resist, some will open, because the yoga shakti doesn't work like mathematically. She pours and then all these things. Then again she will, because she is the all-knowing mother. So she will say, okay, this part working, she will do it. We can't do it mentally. Arranges, then the other part which is little more open, it will start opening it through all the experiences. Then finally it will be like, okay, now let's, you come out. Subconscious fellow. So you are hiding still inside. I am a very nice person, ma. Don't you know? See, I am such a good human being. Everybody calls me wonderful. Ah, I know you. Come, I have to give you a scrub. No, but I am clean. See, Darshan days you have seen me, no? Such nice dress. New dress I wear. And see, that person is so ugly, that person is so bad, this person is bad. When we are seeing badness everywhere, this is what is hidden. Then she says, okay, I know about all of them. You come. Really, ma? Ah. Hold on, take a deep breath. And then, you know how the snakes are caught? From their bill? You have any idea? So people, what they do is, I have seen, it's very interesting. So you know that a snake is gone and hiding inside her, you know? You know this is the place where the hole where the snake is hiding. So they put a parallel burr hole very nearby. Then they will pour water. Now snake has to come out, you know. So it starts wriggling, starts coming out from the other end. Then the fellow catches the snake and pulls out. This is the process. So what she does is, she starts making a little hole somewhere. And then she pours the light. It hurts. It's me also. It's not you. Don't make that mistake. It's not you, but it's nature. Then she will put a little more pressure of consciousness. Then she will, when still, you know, then she'll put love. Then automatically it will convert love into something else, but at least it will come out, because love is a bait. Then it comes out, then she says, now, why are you hiding, mother? I am this snake, no? Ah, you know, I'll put you in the neck of Shiva, don't worry. That's your destiny. So this is the process through which the yoga moves. So all these, you know, people make this yoga 10-day course in integral yoga. I am horrified every time I read it. What do they teach? Some heart-centered meditation. There'll be some money and all. You'll feel good. Yes, you'll feel good. Why not? Go any course in meditation, you will feel good. But it's not feel good. It's not a feel-good factor. As mother would say, excuse me, I'm not a gentleman. People, when they stood in front of mother, there are two examples. And this just to know why the mother comes towards the later part in the yoga. There are two instances. One is recorded by Nirodha. He would say when Shurabindu, we would be in front of Shurabindu, he is like infinity looking into vastness. So you feel you can do anything, you are around, you know. Doesn't matter. But the moment mother came, it was such an intense force of transformation. She would say nothing. That's why people thought she's a disciplinarian. See, love. But such a tremendous power that they just couldn't even. There's an example where Shurabindu laxly lying in the bed and, you know, all the disciples doing all kinds of things. Suddenly, Shurabindu knows mother is come. Shurabindu, description is very interesting. He straightened himself in the bed and he said, mother is coming, mother is coming. No, he must have read 12 years with Shurabindu. Mother is coming, mother is coming. And everybody said, it's not that she is serious. She has tremendous humor, but you have to learn to love her and accept she is a mother. You have to be like Amrita, that even when she scolds him, she is smiling, yes mother, you have to be like that. People asked him, why are you smiling when mother is scolding? Are you? Because she loves me. Have you seen her scold anybody? She loves me. Then one is through into this yoga. Never be afraid of divine. The only thing to be afraid of is our own nature and the world. Divine is not somebody to be afraid of. We have to love him because he loves us. There is nothing like fear of God. There is only love of God. So this is the way. The second example is where people have said something very... One, I know, and it's so true even in real life, said that somebody had some problem, long-standing problem. So she went to meet the mother. Says, mother did nothing before I could see. She looked at me. She says, and it was like a laser surgery going on in the abdomen. As if she had ripped open the abdomen and it was so much intensely burning. She was taking out everything. And after it was over, it was like a sigh of relief. 2 days the person was just, you know, lying flat with that. It's intense pressure. She doesn't use it like that on anybody and everybody. So the only thing required in this yoga, why does Shurabindu say, is open to the mother and be receptive to her. No human mind can do it. Human mind will conceal. Human mind's tendency is, I'm a very good guy. Oh, I do it because of this and this. Always there is somebody else to blame. But mother doesn't, when we open to the mother, it says, okay, you keep blaming, but I'll show you what is there inside. But we have to not make the mistake of thinking, this is me. We are not that. That's why the first thing is to realize the soul. Then it is easy. Because every time when this happens, you know that you are not this. You can separate yourself. The first thing in yoga is to learn to separate ourselves from nature. If we are flowing with the ignorant movements of nature, many suggestions will come. And the most dangerous suggestion is, all life is yoga. I've heard it. All life is yoga. So we have to do everything. Shurabindu is clarified in n number of letters. All life is yoga does not mean continuing to lead life in the same old ignorant way. Then there is no yoga. There is only life. Just like people say karma yoga means I am doing my duty, therefore I am doing karma yoga. There is no karma yoga doing your duties. Yoga is yoga, which means union with the divine. There is no other thing which can be called as yoga. So same way, life has to be changed. So first step is to learn to step back. Take your scooter to a mechanic. Even for a simple thing like your light change or something, switch change, you'll tell him, I'll keep my scooter running, please correct it. He'll say, sir, go to some other mechanic. It will take time, but you have to switch off the scooter and stand and watch. So this practice of learning to stand back from nature and watching it, watch what is happening to the thoughts, thought control. First thing is, watch your thoughts. Control over emotions. Watch what is happening. Rising, falling, here, there. Don't identify. See how they drag us, make a fool of us. Feel amused if you like. Sometimes we'll be drawn into the current. But if we have learned the practice of standing back, very soon we'll stand back. Again we'll see. Then bring in the aspiration. Standing back. No. This gati I don't want. Now sometimes you have taken, the gati has gone because of past nature. Shurabindu describes all this in synthesis. Because the past momentum, it has gone like this. tangent. You don't want it, but it's going. Don't be disheartened. If you stop the train suddenly, what happens? It derails. So the divine says, okay, so what he will do is, he'll slowly, slowly start modifying. The brakes are applied. You will start feeling it. Inwardly, the change is taking place. Outwardly, not. You know, Chotnarayanji used to explain so beautifully about Vibhishna's becoming a vegetarian. It was not that suddenly when he went to Ayodhya, he became vegetarian. He started quietly concealing and taking non-veg food. Because in Ayodhya, there were no non-veg restaurants. Ordinance was passed. But he was a non-vegetarian fellow. And whatever people would complain to Rama, he said, don't worry, don't worry. And then he started feeling a natural repulsion. He started vomiting. Then after some time, he realized, no, time is over. Same thing happens in this yoga. It is through a process of nature we are taken. In nature also it happens. No, if you eat too much, what happens? You have vomiting. You don't enjoy it anymore. So here also a gati of nature, he speaks about the process of evolution. He says, it is not nigraha but sanyama. That leads to nigraha. So what is nigraha? Force suppression. So there are people who enter into yoga and suddenly they feel, from tomorrow I am a siddha. So they start, outwardly doing things in a certain way. But this yoga, maybe they lead a whole life like that because the time has not come to touch upon the layers. It's quite likely. But otherwise, Sri Aurobindo describes that there are tendencies. Once they sprout, they have to go through the whole cycle. So they'll go through the cycles. Then after some time, slowly, 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 the brakes are being applied depending on how, what intensity and momentum. And then slowly, slowly, when the, by sanyama, the practice of sanyama, the tendencies become very weak in nature. That's the time that nigraha works. Have you seen how mongoose beats a snake? What does the mongoose do? Mongoose does only one thing. Mongoose makes sure that the snake can never bite it. That's all that the mongoose does. He is very swift. So it lures the snake to bite and then jumps. Now after some time, mongoose has tremendous energy. After some time, you'll see that the snake is not able to keep pace. It's very weak. It cannot lift the head. That is the time when mongoose jumps over the snake. Actually, you see, this is the process. In nature, you can learn so much. That is the time that the mongoose jumps over the snake. And knowing this, in the ancient times, we had the four ashramas. Grahastha ashram, brahmacharya ashram, grahastha ashram. Then the tendency, tends to become weak and then you can attack it and do it. No, I mean, of course, if you are a Shukdev, by all means. But one must know the process because many people can't bear it. So what they do is when things start emerging from nature, either they start wearing masks or being very good persons. So they'll start, suddenly you will see they're wearing all, sorry to say, white dress or this dress because, they want to look good because they are confronting tendencies in nature. And Sri Aurobindo says for them, perhaps asceticism is necessary because they are very crude. Only crude persons need that kind of harsh methods. Or they will suddenly, because there is a lot of greed in nature, no, I'll eat only this kind of food. Because that's the only way you try to counter it. But in yoga of transformation, it doesn't work for long. But the other way is that it goes, becomes slow. So stop giving the sanction from inside. This is what is important. Standing back from nature, do not give sanction. What is sanction? Justifying it. So if we observe, we'll see it initially. Are it's so nice. One doesn't even observe that there is anything wrong or amiss. Then second step is this human nature. Third step is I'm trying but I can't help it. Fourth step is you say I'm not trying enough actually. Now the real game starts. Fifth step is inwardly there is no sanction but outwardly you're dragged again and again and again. Depending on the tendency. I'm giving greed for food one example. Then the sixth step is that you start experiencing. Because you are inwardly not giving the sanction, the enjoyment has come down. Why? Because what is the part that enjoys? It's not body, the mind that enjoys. Rasagrahan. So the mind after a while says, I am with the soul, not with the vital. So the mind is not able to enjoy. Still the vital is strong. Then after some time, the vital also says, yeah, if this game is becoming too tedious, the pressure to change is also increasing. And then after a time, the tendency vanishes. So it's a process. But first step is to learn to stand back, to look at nature and know this is not me, but it has to be worked upon. In old yoga, this separation was used for liberation. So there were yogis who said, this is not me, and didn't care about it. So you will see the life of yogins. Jadavat, Balavat, Shubhinda speaks of that. In 2-3 places he says, a yogin can become Jadavat, like a stone, it doesn't matter. Balavat, he is behaving like a little child. Pishachvat, like a ghoul, Shubhinda's words. Or Unmatvat, like a madman. But then he adds after this, but in our yoga, it is not acceptable because we are here for transformation of nature. But there is, in traditional yoga, you just stand back and slowly you can arrive at such a separation of the Purusha from Prakriti that it really doesn't affect you. Human beings will think that what's happening to is nature, but it doesn't affect you. You are really free. Classic examples being of, you know, Sri Ramakrishna, greatest of among the great, and of course Swami Vivekananda. So Sri Ramakrishna, we know that, you know, very interesting story, very sweet, touching story. He has to go and give talk. Talk means like people are coming. And he goes inside and says to Sharda Ma, are the prawn pakoras ready? People have come. This is very sweet. It's not that he if he wanted, he could renounce everything. But it did matter to him. How does it matter? But for certain things, he was so particular that it is said that if you put a coin, he had... See, this is the difference between yoga of transformation and traditional yoga. One can understand like this. For him, if you put even a coin in his bed, even if you put actual mattresses and put it below, he couldn't sleep once because it was so uncomfortable. He used to say, no, kamini kanchan. But this is not mastery. Mastery and transformation is you can have any amount of money and yet not be affected and use it divinely. So see the difference. And he is among the greatest of the great. If you take the old yogas, I don't see anybody as great as Sri Ramakrishna who has really gone beyond through every path. And another was Kamini. So once there is a story of a lady who touched his toe and immediately he reacted, Harar Gange, and took the water over him to purify himself. Because even that contact will bring in a vibration which he doesn't want. But of course we have to understand that this is so true. Contacts can bring in things. It's not that he is absolutely right. But then the real mastery has to be still greater. But one has to know prematurely it doesn't take place. So in ashram, how the mother started, her starting point is very different. So boys, girls mix, they wear shorts, mix with each other. And she kept on reminding, why can't you forget that you are not a boy or a girl? Why can't you forget? Why can't you forget? So she started on a very different note. Because if you take the traditional yoga aside, it is impossible to enter into this yoga. Near impossible. And I'll close with that example of that yogi who was in Himalaya. Again, to show the difference. So when we try to compare, it's a totally different process. So there was this yogi who had for many years been in the Himalayas. And when he came here, people were very impressed with his ability to meditate. And I don't want to take names. People who are, names are legendary in the ashram context. And they went and told the mother, mother, he is such a great yogi, meditate. Mother just smiled. So nice, no, if he could take up this yoga. Mother smiled. So one day, people told him, why don't you come, playground meditation, so nice. We all have gone, playground meditation, so wonderful. So he came with that yogi. And both are sitting in meditation. Now when the meditation is over, so when the ashram inmate who was highly impressed opened his eyes, he saw he's standing in a corner, all as if he's just wanting to go out. He said, what happened? He said, how can I meditate here? He said, why? All the girls are here wearing shorts. Telling you a real story. It was impossible for him to sit and meditate because he had never faced this challenge. That's why the mother says it's much easier to be in the Himalayas and behave like a yogi. When at the end, toward the later part, you know, conversations, she says, you know, when you do yoga in life, there are a lot of challenges. So then she says, solutions. She's thinking aloud. She says, one of them is like that, you know, Sangrila, that Sangalila, same story is there. They have conquered aging, but the moment this girl falls in love and comes out of that safe zone, she becomes old. Those who have seen the movie, Lost Horizon. So, she says, the solution suggested has been to try it out in a Himalayan gorge. So, she was contemplating, if I just take a handful of people, start, supposing we had started the ashram there, and after the transformation you come out. Then she says, the problem is we are too much outside life. And the moment you come into life, everything goes. You just cannot confront life. So here, and all this Aurobindo writes in Synthesis in her own way. He says, in this yoga, in the beginning it is difficult because it's very wide. Imagine somebody coming to ashram and first thing you think is, so nice, I can meditate near the samadhi whenever I feel like I want to do this way, that way. And you are confronted with everything which is, you will start feeling ki, are kaha gaya? I came for meditating near the samadhi. So the difficulty is in the beginning because you enter into a wideness. See, the other paths are narrow paths. This is a wide path. But he says, as you proceed, it becomes easier and easier because you have started like that. It becomes very easy for you to navigate, to, be with life, to deal with everything because you are starting with that challenging point. And why it can be done this way? Because the Divine Mother is here. She takes up the reins of the yoga, and once she takes up, she is... You see, we may give up because we are human beings, no? But can we imagine, will the Divine Mother ever abandon? She is the ancient of the ancients. Ever she waits on the unrealized peaks. She never gives up. That's why she is divine. This is her labor, labor of love she has undertaken since creation began. So every time we feel disheartened, we have to remind ourselves, Lord, I am what I am, but you are what you are. It's not, if one is doing yoga by one's own effort, it will seem impossible. But your grace is infinite, your love is infinite, your force is infinite. Your mercy is infinite. Your peace is infinite. Your power is infinite. And if we take that attitude and go, we will ourselves see the change. In each one, it will unfold differently. There are no comparison notes. Each one is starting point differently. As we said in the Steps of the Soul in the beginning, that some are very complex. They have their own difficulties and their own pluses. There are others who are very simple, but they have their own pluses, but their own difficulties, or rather evolution which has to enter into many realms. So this no comparisons here, no spiritual yoga is not a field of spiritual desertation. It's not like a field of ambition, where am I compared to so and so, because the journeys have started differently. We are meant to express something different. Each one is unique. But the central point is this, to keep opening to the mother in all times of difficulties, to just remember her and call her, offer to her persistently, however big the difficulty, not to gloss over it, not to say, oh, this is fine, mother will not see it, it's okay. Never to do that. To tell her, it doesn't mean you have to tell the world. This truthfulness doesn't mean everybody have to tell, you know what, I have this difficulty. That's like the Christians who say, I am such a sinner. No. No sinner, no saint. You have to just go there and tell her, mother, this is what I am going through. Say as honestly and as consciously as one can. Then aspire what you want it to be, which way you want it to go. And then offer at her feet and say, let your will be done. But at no cost, I want to be away from you and away from the yoga. Then she will do it in her own way. And that will be not only the wisest way, but the most beautiful of ways. It will be so perfection that when the work is done, then one will see there is a wisdom that operates in each curve and line. There is a wisdom that operates in each rise and fall. Ma.